Hi, I'm Daniel Lucas, and welcome to Music 101. Music 101 is all created to empower music itself and legendary icons in the music industries. And today, I have my special guest. He's the author of the book Moments in Time, no other than Mr. Tom Black.
Good day, Daniel, and hello to all your listeners. My name's Tom Locke, and I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is on the west coast of Canada. And I've had the pleasure on Daniel's show talking in the past about music in general, then specifically the music of the 50s and 60s, and how rock and roll has evolved from a baby into, when we look at it as maybe a grandfather today. Our chats in talking about the 50s was a great opportunity to talk about, you know, where things got started, how things evolved, how things like R&B, gospel, rhythm and blues, country, hillbilly music, jump blues, boogie woogie, all merged into what became a new sound and got known as rock and roll. And then through the 60s, things started to spin out a little bit. And we talked about dance crazes, girl groups, homogenized music, things being, you know, tempered down a little bit, protest records making their peak, and things just weren't as edgy. Now, that leads us into the 70s. And to many, it was a bit of a period of what would be termed malaise. The Vietnam War did not go well in the 60s and in the early 70s, and political corruptness was present, especially with Watergate.
And yes.
Remember that, yeah. And remember, people found their escape through music, and music had also become a vehicle for protest. Back in 67, we had the Bruffo Springfield, if you recall, doing a song called For What It's Worth. And this was followed up in 1970 by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young with Ohio. And that was a song written by Neil Young about the killing of four students at Kent State University at an anti-war demonstration. And it was the start of a lot of upheaval during the period of time. And we also have to remember, then we were heavy into the psychedelic age with groups like The Doors, Jefferson Airplane, which morphed into Jefferson Starship, Jimi Hendrix, and of course, Steppenwolf leading the way. I guess we could probably say it was best described as sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So let me stop here for a moment and ask a question, Daniel. Are you aware of what became known as the 27 Club?
No, Mr. Tom, what is it?
Well, this period of time actually led to the beginnings of the 27 Club. And this was a phenomenon, as it's been called now today, was primarily fueled by the deaths of Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison of the Doors, and Janis Joplin, who all passed away between 1969 and 1971. Do you know what they had in common?
What is it, Mr. Tom?
They're all 27 years old.
Oh, wow.
And sounds then, subsequent to that, Kurt Cobain, we all certainly know of later on, Amy Winehouse, also 27. Very unusual time, and this is, you, people can go out and Google the 27 Club. I think you'll be amazed to find out how this has been so tied in to music and its evolution. So just, you know, a thing for a sobering thought about some of the great artists that we remember who are no longer with us. Then
yes,
the other thing that another offshoot, if you will, was something I got into, to tell you the truth, was something called funk music. And it was an offshoot of soul and rock music, if you will. And probably one of the greatest examples and of a group was a group called Rufus, with a lead singer called Chaka Khan. And their big record in 1974 was Tell Me Something Good. In fact, Chaka Khan was just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, along with that group, there is others such as Earth, Wind & Fire, Kool & the Gang, and of course, Sly and the Family Stone. One of their big hits, of course, was Dance to the Music. So, very interesting time, because in tandem with that funk sound was the something that is often referred to as the smooth soul groups. And what do I mean by that? Well, let me give you some examples just to give you the flavor. A group called the Delphonics, and they had a song called Didn't I Blow Your Mind? And then there was Russell Thompson Jr., the lead singer of the Stylistics, who had You Are Everything, Betcha by Golly Wow, Break Up to Make Up, and You Make Me Feel Brand New. And then complimenting them was another group, the OJs, who had songs like Backstabbers and Love Train. And in fact, the OJs, if you can believe this, charted 21 times in the 70s. And they charted 30 times all over on Billboard. Phenomenal group, that whole flow. But outdoing them all, a lot of people might say, was the Motown sound.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Led by the Jackson 5. Jackson 5 took center stage in the 70s. And actually, right at the beginning of the 70s. And there's an interesting phenomenon about the Jackson 5 that a lot of people don't realize. And that was the fact that the Jackson 5, if you can believe this, their first five records to go on to the Billboard Hot 100 all went to number one. And these include, their first one was I Want You Back, which was released in late 1969, became number one in this 1970. It was followed up by a song that everybody seems to remember, ABC. And then followed up by The Love You Save. Then followed up by I'll Be There. This is all in 1970. And to finish it off, pretty amazing, I think, they had a number one song at Christmas that year. And it was their version of Santa Claus Is Coming to Town.
Yes, sounds interesting. Those songs are really indicated that they are in the 70s.
You betcha. So you can appreciate where things are going. There's just so much, I'll call it richness of music, you know, really coming out. But, and people wanted it. Again, it was through music they could escape, or, you know, listen to things, have a choice in terms of these new genres moving out, whether it was smooth soul, whether it was Motown, whether it was funk. There was great opportunities. Now, at the same time, we can't, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, come the mid-70s, the evolution of the disco sound. Now, and the disco sound actually evolved out of the underground nightclubs, black nightclubs, and nightclubs that were certainly held and navigated and really, how can I say, participated fully by the LGBTQ groups. And for them, it was escape. It was an opportunity to feel safe and go out and be themselves. And one thing that remained that we've talked about before through the 50s, 60s, and now into the 70s There was still a craving to dance. Get out on the dance floor and dance like nobody's watching. And that was really there. Suddenly, things go mainstream. Saturday Night Fever comes out. Remember John Travolta?
Oh, yes.
Walking down with his strut. And all of a sudden, he makes disco cool. And the upper echelon picks it up. And it leads to a lot of great performers going mainstream. Probably often referred to as the queen of disco, although she didn't quite like the moniker, was Donna Summer. Phenomenal performer. And then there was Gloria Gaynor, who had a song that really, I think, epitomized that time and somewhat of defiance by disco. And that song was I Will Survive. And it said a lot for the women's movement at that time. And then, of course, thanks to disco, the biggest group sales of all the 70s re-transformed a group into the hottest act of the 70s. And that group was the Bee Gees.
Oh, yes. We're going to remember Bee Gees. Until now, they're still echoing. Their songs are famous.
They were terrific. They really were, and they made disco cool. They're on Saturday Night Fever album, as we all know, and that soundtrack for people really got into disco music was something else. And then things really started happening. Studio 54 became cool in New York. It was tough to get into these places. You had to have the right look. It changed and to the detriment of it starting. All of a sudden, if I didn't look cool, I couldn't go to these nightclubs, and all I wanted to do was get out and escape. So there was some pros and cons for it, but this mediocre rise, as a lot of people know, follows with a crash, and often phrased as disco sucks. And I think that culminated, and I don't know if you recall this, but with a disco demolition night in Chicago at a baseball game at Comiskey Park. And this happened on July 12, 1979. People came, you got in at a special price, you brought a disco record. Well, they filled the place. It was a doubleheader. Between games, they went out and they burned disco records in the middle of the field. Well, it totally got out of hand. People just rushed from the crowds, from the stadium seats, and onto the field. To a point, the second game was canceled, and the field was just a mess. And the repercussions of that night for the Chicago White Sox and their marketing group, the Vec family, was something else. Now, we say this, that's still not all what's going on in the 70s. This is what boggles my mind. Because in contrast to this, there's something that comes out that today we describe as yacht rock. Back then, it ended up getting coined the phrase as soft rock, sort of easy listening, laid back music. Examples: Jimmy Buffett, Margaritaville. Sadly, we just lost Jimmy this year. Remember Seals and Crofts doing Summer Breeze, another real beautiful type record. Another guy who could have been being a big, big star passed on was a guy named Bobby Bloom, who had a very nice, soft, upbeat, easy listening song called Montego Bay. And of course, there was singer-songwriter Christopher Cross, who did two big records of his that comes to mind for me were Sailing and Ride Like the Wind. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. And then we had other offshoots, and some of them were cult-like, and the came a following of non-commercial groups who became big, but you didn't hear them that much in the radio. And the best example I can give you is the Grateful Dead. And people who followed them, they got to be known as the Deadheads, and to be a Deadhead was cool if you're into that. So it's incredible, you know, what was going on. And then, and you know, we talked before about longevity. You know, it's very unusual for groups to stay around a long time. I mean, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, they're anomalies actually in the scheme of things. Most, you know, came and went in the music business. But in longevity, another tandem comes out in the 70s that really got to me. And that was a group called Hall & Oates. You remember Hall & Oates, Daniel?
So far, no. Sorry, Mr.
That's Dalton. Okay. No problem. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. But they had some huge hits. Two of them right off the top when they got going in 1976 with Sarah Smile and She's Gone. Sadly, they're in the news right now because they're fighting over their music and moving forward and who can use the band name and that. But Daryl Hall and John Oates were phenomenal, and they kept going for a long period of time and always seemed to attract crowds, again, because of their quality of their music. So that sort of gives you a little, you know, feeling for the 70s. But, you know, we talked out, you know, and we're going through this and, you know, about my book and that. We talked about the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, which is really what I glom to. The interesting thing about the 70s that came out, there is still a thirst for good old rock and roll or rock and roll's roots. To escape back to, you know, to those simpler times. And I mean, in New York, there was a rock and roll revival. Cousin Brucey was on one big FM station. He was going head to head against Wolfman Jack. My good friend, DJ and author and historian, Norman Knight, was also there in New York during this time, this whole movement of rock and roll revivals. On the screen, you may recall we had American Graffiti, came out in 1973 with Ron Howard and a cast of characters in that one, including Harrison Ford. People loved that movie. So much so that subsequent to this, on TV, a TV show came out called Happy Days. Happy Days being from 1974 to 1984. And an offshoot of Happy Days also did extremely well, called Laverne and Shirley, which went from 1976 to 1983. The soundtracks for those shows were all music from the late 50s and early 60s, back at simpler times.
That's interesting, Mr. Tom.
To close and talk about things going full circle, I like to relate this to myself. So my most memorable time in the 70s occurred in Toronto in 1974 at a rock and roll revival concert at Maple Leaf Gardens. The first half of the show featured a girl group called the Crystals. Their big songs were Then He Kissed Me, Do Run Run, and He's a Rebel. What a warm-up act that was. The audience was buzzing. Next, coming on the stage, getting back to our dance periods of time, Chubby Checker comes out on the stage. And Chubby doesn't look that chubby. He looks in tremendous shape. And he does the twist, the frog, the frug, the limbo, the watusi, all the Hucklebuck, all his records. But amazingly, he does it wearing the fashion of the times, shoes called clogs. Do you remember clogs? Did you ever see those? Big, cumbersome, almost wooden type shoes that you slipped on your feet. And there's Chubby Checker out there doing all these dances from the early 60s. Absolutely blew my mind.
Definitely. But before we go on, Mr. Tan, I want to shout out to the people listening in Germany. Guten Morgen, Germany. Danke for supporting this podcast. Because in Bavaria, I got 25% audience share. Land Berlin at 25%. Audience share North Rhine-Westphalia at 25%. And Rhine Plus. At 25. Thank you, Germany. Duncan, for supporting this podcast, because this podcast is created to empower music itself and legendary icon in the music industry. So, Mr. Tom, what is the best highlight of 70s music?
Well, I think I'll continue on for the best of the 70s. My opinion was that show, because I'm going to tell you who the last three acts were, and then I'll answer that question. After Chubby Checker, after I talked about Chubby Checker on the floor, there was one act before the first half ended to come on, and it was the incomparable Roy Orbison. Now, you could have heard a pin drop when Roy Orbison came on the stage and performed, and at the end of his performance, people, they could have went home then. They were so happy with what they had seen. What really stands out to me for that night, it was the first time and the only time I can recall ever seeing Roy Orbison wearing white, not black. Very interesting. The second half of the show was a group from the 50s that were involved in starting it all. It was Bill Haley and the Comets doing Rock Around the Clock and their other big hits, including their bass player standing on his bass while playing it. And then last but not least, stuff that always has been close to me is the area of street corner harmony, often referred to today as doo-wop. And Dion the Belmonts came out the stage and closed the show doing such hit songs as I Wonder Why, probably the song that epitomizes that type of singing. Now, so what stands out to me, Daniel, is that with all these offshoots that came out that we talked about today in the 70s, and they're strong and people still follow them today, it still came back to their roots. Things had gone full circle. The roots in rock and roll will remain forever. And no matter the arrangement, a good song will always pass the test of time. So with that in mind, and these type of memories, that's what was the background for me, the impetus, if you will, to write my book, Moments in Time, you know, story about the music and the artists of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You know, we can't lose this. My book is really a disguise. It's a legacy book for people to really understand the evolution of rock and roll, and most importantly, its impact.
Definitely, people. 70s is the music history is known for its diversity and development of a new music styles that shape future generations.
You're right on, sir.
And Mr. Tom, I think also David Bowie is in the 70s, right?
He was.
And comparing to David Bowie to other like Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, the Rolling Stones, they are the remarkable iconic in the 70s that until now is still echoing and echoing that they're being, let's say, idol. That make the music more vibrant, more profound in the sense that millennials or Gen Z make it more better. Don't you think?
Yeah, you know, you make a good point, Daniel, and I can support that. Ironically, last weekend I was at a record show and I brought out some of my iconic albums that it was time to pass on to and other people. And this gentleman came over much, much, much younger than me. And his eyes popped when he saw that I had three Led Zeppelin albums, and he immediately bought them off me.
That's amazing. Also, the Fleetwood Mac, right? Bob Marley, Elton John, Stevie Wonder's, the Eagles, and of course, Queen.
Oh, no, I mean, you're so right, Dad. I mean, there's so many things. I was trying to get some highlights and get ideas about, you know, the group, but you're so right. These people all came up, but they're all inspired, you know, by the people in the past. And you make some great choices. I mean, Stevie Wonder, there's one of the spin-off of Motown's. It was phenomenal. And I mean, Motown was so hot with the Jackson 5, Stevie Wonder, the Temptations, the Four Tops. I mean, yikes. I mean, they had it going. There's no question about it.
Yes, they are the legendary, iconic artists in the 70s that until now they are idolized and being copied on Make It Better, Bold and Best.
You bet.
So, Mr. Tom, can you please invite our listeners to support your Moments in Time?
Oh, thank you very much, Daniel. And especially with Christmas coming, my book has become a solution for Christmas for some people. Like, what do I buy my dad? What do I buy my grandfather? Hey, what do I buy my close, you know, colleague and friends who love this music? So it has really been a solution for them at this time of the season. And the good news is it's available on Amazon worldwide. So that's easy for anyone to get, and also they can get it through my website, which is www.mitstories.com, and happy to oblige there as well. And I'm also happy to chat with anyone that takes time out and wants to write me, and I can be reached at Tom Locke, all one word, TomLocke at mitstories.com. And my goal is I hope I put some smiles on people's faces this Christmas.
Definitely, people, let's support Mr. Tom Locke, because the book is something else. There is a follow-up for this book, right, Mr. Tom?
Yeah, I'm in the works now. I'm talking to that right at the moment. And hopefully next year, God willing, we'll have something to show you.
Yes. So next week, Mr. Tom, let's talk about 80s. Okay, people, tune in. We're going to talk about the 80s. I think 80s is my favorite, Mr. Tom.
sounds like it. I better do my homework. Okay.
Mr. Tom, and have a nice season.
You
Merry
too.
Christmas. Oh, Merry yeah. Christmas. You too. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everyone. So, Mr. Tom, thank you for your time.
Okay, bye for now.
Bodyguard people, see you soon.